Welcome to The West Steps, a podcast from the Colorado Children's Campaign that explores issues that impact Colorado kids and families. I'm your host, Beza Tedes.
Welcome to The West Steps. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the podcast. We are normally off during the summer, but since the legislative session is happening and kind of life is upside down, we are bringing you bonus episodes a little bit more frequently this season. And on this week's episode, I have a friend and somebody who works very closely with the Children's Campaign. And I'm going to let her introduce herself and tell us a little bit about what she does.
Thank you so much, Beza. My name is Christina Walker. I am the Director of Policy and Advocacy at Clayton Early Learning. We are a early childhood education nonprofit in Northeast Denver, and we serve children on our at our Educare Denver site on our campus. But we also do research and evaluation. We also train and do professional development for early childhood educators, and then obviously we have a policy and advocacy team, and that's the team that I lead.
So, like everything else in the world, COVID-19 has kind of turned everything upside down. Can you talk us through how it has fundamentally changed what you guys do?
Yes. So when the pandemic was becoming more clear back in March that things were needing to shut down as cases were spreading, we actually followed suit of the Denver public schools. When they closed, we decided that we would close our campus as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was during a time where it was like not clear as to what childcare providers should or shouldn't be doing in terms of staying open. And we decided to stay closed, but to be able to serve our families through virtual ways. So they were doing via Zoom morning circle times with their kiddos and with the kiddos' families, which I've heard was beautiful chaos, as reported from many of the teachers. But the kids were just so happy to see each other and see their teachers. We also did a Clayton Cares drive, which we are still doing throughout the summer, to provide much needed food support, diapers and wipes, supports, activity kits that families can do together that are developmentally appropriate for the age of the children that we are serving at Clayton as well. And so we did that with many partners, and we're very fortunate to be partnered with Rocky Mountain Food Bank, as well as many other partners as well. So those are some of the ways that we decided to support our families during our closure.
Mm-hmm. Was there any kind of clear guidelines from the state or from the federal government at the beginning about the closure or the opening of childcare centers?
Yes, I think it actually came just a few days after we closed that Governor Polis had asked that childcare providers, if possible, stay open. And right at the beginning there, they were able, a bunch of partners came together, including the Children's Campaign, to create emergency childcare collaborative that could match parents with providers who were open, particularly for those parents who were either direct response, working in direct response fields or essential workers, such as those who were still serving all of us at the grocery stores and at our pharmacies. So we were very appreciative that we were able to put something like that together in our state. However, we did also receive guidance from our federal folks at the Office of Head Start, because we are a Head Start and Early Head Start grantee, that you know, if we remained open, we needed to serve our kiddos. And if we were closed, we needed to still serve our kiddos in our Head Start and Early Head Start classrooms. And so that's what we did. We served them to the best of our ability. And we also did a lot of direct connection with our families about, you know, what services they needed through our family support, child and family educators that we have on staff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our families didn't want, you know, Clayton to necessarily be open. Some did, some were struggling without the lack of childcare, but many folks were very happy to keep their kiddos home because of the pandemic. And so I think that just shows that, you know, to each person, you know, we experience these things differently. And, you know, each of us had a different level of risk potentially with the COVID-19. So,
yeah, I think let's talk about that a little bit, because I think, you know, in this space, one of the things that have been very prominent in the policy conversation has been how to keep the workforce in place and how to provide emergency childcare for those who need it and are serving in essential capacity for us who get to stay home. But the risk assessment for parents looks different. So can you talk to us about some of the emotional and risk assessments parents are doing now when they are thinking about sending their kids to childcare?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question and something that I think the whole field across the country is grappling with. And so that's why you're seeing now more and more parent surveys to try to understand better what families are thinking and facing. However, I think it's interesting. We particularly at Clayton, have many multi-generational families living in one household or different families living in the same household. And are dependent on each other for childcare that is after hours. So care that is happening at night or on the weekends when Clayton Early Learning and many childcare providers are not open. And so because of that, I think they knew that, particularly given that COVID-19 was really affecting folks that were over 65, so grandparents, aunts and uncles, and people who may have asthma or other heart and lung diseases, you know, I think that they were worried about having their kid be exposed over and over again in childcare. And then also some of those folks, unfortunately, did lose their job during this time, right? As we know, many people were laid off or furloughed, or let go from their jobs. And so they were able to take care of their kiddos because they were no longer at their job, at least for right now. And so I think everyone, you know, like you said, has to decide what's best for their household. And if you have grandma living with you, if you have grandma sometimes watching the kiddos, you share spaces with other families, you need to do that risk assessment to decide what's really best for you. And, you know, childcare providers are always doing their best to keep the health and safety of kiddos in mind. But during this time of COVID, you know, there was always so much that we didn't know. Mm-hmm. So it can be hard to decide what really is best to do.
Yeah, it's very interesting to also think about how the pandemic has really exposed some of the structural and privileges that already exist. I think that some of the families that can afford to send their kids with, even with, you know, risk, despite the efforts of childcare providers, really highlight some of those differences in resources and access. Can you talk to us what the already existing inequities that are coming up to the surface right now?
Yes, definitely. So I think, you know, we have done a lot to make sure that folks in Colorado and across the country have health insurance. Mm-hmm. But of course, everyone has access to different levels of health insurance. Many of the children and families, if not most, that we serve in our Head Start and Early Head Start program likely have Medicaid or CHIP Plus, the Child Health Plus program. So they do have access to healthcare services. But you know, during this time of COVID, you know, there wasn't the same level of access. There was also fear of going to the hospital or going to the doctor's offices. We at Clayton, because we are so fortunate to have blended and braiding funding, as well as, you know, some additional funding behind us, we are able to make sure that our staff has access to healthcare and to sick days and to flex days and all of those great supports that, you know, I think all employers want to be able to provide. But in the childcare industry, that's not always the case. There's many childcare providers who don't have health insurance coverage or have very limited health insurance coverage, which would make getting sick be financially devastating for that family. Mm-hmm. There was also many childcare providers who decided to close, which basically meant they laid off their educators at their center, or if it was a large family childcare home and they had other providers that worked there, they laid them off. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, basically all of these issues with the workforce and with not having enough supports or a high pay for the early childhood educator workforce has always been there. But mm-hmm. like you said, the COVID-19 pandemic has elevated a lot of the inequities and a lot of the issues that are facing the early childhood education field to the surface, as well as with other frontline and essential workforces, like those who work at the grocery store. Like, they're putting their lives at risk for us, but they don't necessarily get paid or have the health insurance they need in order to take that risk. And so it's really great that we've been able to get some of those federal stimulus dollars that can help support some of these issues, but structurally we still have them and we need to fix them moving forward.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like the people who we are classifying as essential are not compensated appropriately. So if I understand correctly, we weren't paying our childcare providers adequately enough, or providing enough health insurance to begin with. And during the pandemic, when childcare providers closed, those educators were either laid off or not being compensated. Can you talk to us what the disparity looks like in terms of the need for childcare and the capacity we have actually to provide childcare right now in Colorado?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's really interesting. Normally in Colorado, we have a lack of access for particularly infants and toddlers because providing care for infants and toddlers is very expensive because you have a very low teacher to child ratio, as you would expect with an infant. They need a lot of a lot of care and a lot of support. As opposed to preschoolers and school-age kids who obviously are much more independent. And so normally that's where we have the really stark issues. But during the pandemic, it actually switched to school-age care. School-age care was really difficult to find because schools were closed and parents still needed a place to put their school-age child if they were needing to go to work or even to work from home, right? Like, we heard so many parents struggle to work from home and also be teacher, right? And I think that, because of that, it really kind of shows that, you know, this caregiving industry is really, really dependent on women. And a lot of the at-home caregiving and teaching was also tended to be, women who stepped up to do that caregiving. And I think that as we think about reopening or not reopening and the lack of childcare that we may have because some businesses are closing, mm-hmm. some businesses are unable to open up to their full capacity, or some businesses have to stay closed because they themselves have a vulnerability to the virus. And so they're nervous about reopening, or their educators have left the industry and gone to find a job somewhere else. So because of all of those things, if we don't have access to early care and education for these kiddos, parents not only won't be able to work, but these kiddos may not get the early childhood opportunities and experiences that they need in order to really support their healthy development. And that's really important. These are our future doctors and our future, frontline workers and essential workers. And it's really important to get them ready for school. And those that will be impacted the most are likely those that need it the most, or that don't have a lot of resources because they live in under-resourced parts of our state or communities, particularly those who are children of color, mm-hmm. children of immigrants, as well as the providers of color. And the family friend and neighbor providers that you know, don't necessarily have access to a lot of the supports that are coming down from the federal level right now because they were, you know, kind of left out of the package or not considered enough in the package. So I think that it's really important that we think really holistically about how we rebuild the system after this is over, as we get used to our new normal.
Yeah, I want to dial into something that you said about who's doing caregiving and how we understand caregiving in general, because I think we need to go back to some of the basics to really build a system that's equitable for everybody. It's very interesting to see that women, even when they were working full time, they were also taking care of children and working, but we tend to not pay caregivers adequate money for the really, really hard work and time-consuming work they have been doing. Are there any state-level conversations and some federal conversations around policies for compensation for caregivers?
That's a really great question. And I think, you know, when we talk about caregivers, obviously we're talking about our early care and learning educators and providers. Mm-hmm. As well as our family and friends and neighbors who helps provide support to family members who need support as well. But we're also thinking about, you know, care for our elderly and care for those who need extra support, such as those with disabilities. And all of those folks also don't make enough money. And it's really important to think through how dependent our society is on them to keep folks healthy, keep folks economically stable, to keep, child development going. However, we don't value inherently in our society that work. Often childcare is talked about as babysitting, when in fact it's so much more than that. And taking care of elderly folks or folks with disabilities for very low pay without actual, you know, good healthcare for themselves is also very difficult. And I think that fundamentally, you know, we did see this really great outpouring of support for nurses and frontline workers during this time who were putting themselves at risk, which my mom's a nurse and my dad was a paramedic. So it's always wonderful to see people appreciate those industries and those folks who I've loved and appreciated all my life. But, you know, we also need to think of those other essential workers like those who were working in grocery stores night and day to make sure that we had food and a supply chain, and yeah. Same with those of childcare providers.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting to see how, you know, childcare, a conversation I think overdue about how crucial it is to rebuilding the economy. Nobody can go back to work or work as productively as possible, even if they are working from home, if they also have to be teachers and provide quality childcare. And it's one that requires a lot of expertise. Can you talk to us a little bit about how we should be thinking about rebuilding the system? What are the elements we should really have out on the table right now as we kind of start to realize how deeply crucial this industry is to not just provide, you know, the necessary and important educational benefits to kids, but also to rebuilding the economy again?
That's a great question. I think there's a lot that we can do to support the system. And there's a lot of support for that, both at the national level and at the state level, you know, to provide, you know, shared services for providers who want to opt into a network so that they don't have to be HR. They don't have to be you know, the finance, they can have some back end support. And other businesses do this as well, where they have this back end support so that they can just provide the service. And then that helps them take a lot off their plate. You know, a lot of providers don't tend to accept the Child Care Assistance Program in Colorado, because CCAP policies over time have gotten a lot better and a lot more family friendly and a lot more provider friendly. But there's still a lot we can do to help support providers, you know, to accept CCAP by making those policies even better for providers so that they're not taking a loss in accepting a child who has CCAP. I think that's really important, because those are the children who obviously need that extra support, and the families who need that extra support because they otherwise wouldn't be able to afford childcare. Yeah. Or to go to school, right? And I think that there's also a lot that we can do in terms of like lifting up the profession just in general at a public and political level in order to make sure that we're adequately funding the system, mm-hmm. so that we're not putting it on the backs of parents or the backs of providers, but we as a society look at early childhood care and education as a public good, the same way that we view K through 12 education, because it's so important not only to the workforce, and as we saw, K through 12 is now even being talked about how they, watch children during the day so that parents can go to work. But also because of the benefits that come out of it for the children and for the family, particularly for programs who provide some wraparound services to children and families. And so I think those are some things that we really need to be considering as we're rebuilding, is how are we directing funding, and to what end? Are we really doing it to support the best way for families and for providers? Yeah. Or are we doing it to save money and to, cut corners? And I think that we need to really be thinking more holistically about the system.
Yeah. So you guys have been open back again for about a week now. Well, what are some of the things that surprised you, or what are some of the things that you have had appreciation for as things come up?
Yeah, so we opened back up for some of our classrooms on June 1st, last Monday, and it's been really great to see the collaboration across the entire organization. We had a reopening task force that I was a part of to make sure that we were looking through all of the public health guidance and new policies and payment practices to make sure that we were doing the best we could to open back up. And I think that, not every provider, not every early childhood center or family childcare home provider, has those resources. And so that's why, Clayton, we're going to be sharing with the field our reopening guide, because, it was, like I said, a labor of love for the whole team that was a part of it. We have found some pain points, especially in the fact that as of up until last Thursday, we had to have only class sizes of 10 children or less. Mm-hmm. And that obviously is very difficult when you normally have classrooms that hold 15 to 20 children in terms of space issues. We were running out of space and all of that. We started with only 7 classrooms so that we could basically pilot and get some kinks out in the beginning. We'll be opening up additional classrooms on Monday the 15th, as well as I believe June 29th, so that we'll be back at capacity. And I think that the biggest thing that was difficult, especially the first few days, was the check-in process, because we have to, check people's temperatures and make sure that they are symptom-free before they go to work, as well as the children and the families before we have the children come in. And so mm-hmm. that was a completely new process and system that we had to set up that we don't normally do. And so that was took a lot of training and a lot of intense thought that went into that.
Mm-hmm. I think we all at this time want to be useful and want to participate in a way that benefits our community and be able to support the people we value very, very much in our community. So can you give us some ideas on how people can plug into this work and how they can inform themselves and also raise the issue to what you said about making childcare and early childhood education a public good?
Yeah, that's probably the million-dollar question right now. Mm-hmm. I think folks can do a lot in terms of, if they go to childcare and they see the amazing things that their childcare educators and their teachers are doing with their children, to really elevate that on social media, or if you really appreciate that the ability that you have to, you know, that you receive CCAP and that funding has allowed you to go back to school or to go to work and really work your way up within the, you know, whatever organization you work for, maybe writing a letter to the editor or reaching out to your legislator or even a local policymaker like your county commissioner to tell them about how important it is, I think would be so helpful. We really just need to start raising our voices in different ways, just in general, and to really talk about the inequities that all of our systems have in you know, in order to be able to better support our youngest children. And so I think there's, you know, if they want to get plugged into this work, I would say definitely follow the Children's Campaign Kids Flash emails, listen to the podcast. They also have a great video with the West Steps with Riley Kitts that I love watching. Riley's so dynamic. you know, you can sign up for Clayton emails at claytonearlylearning.org. Please reach out to me, cwalker@claytonearlylearning.org, if you have any questions or ways. And you can also sign up. We co-convene a coalition called the Raise Colorado Coalition that's particularly focused on helping pregnant people, infants, and toddlers, and supporting policies that really support families in that time range. And so you can go to raisecolorado.org and sign up for our listserv to get plugged in the legislation and the other policies that we are working on to better support this time period.
Well, thank you so much for making the time for us and for unpacking what it feels like to reopen childcare centers right now, but also talking deeply about the emotional and risk assessments parents are doing on top of everything else. So I really appreciate your time. Hopefully we'll talk to you very soon.
Thank you so much, Beza, for having me, and really appreciate all the work that you all are doing to highlight the importance of this field.
Thank you so much. Thank you both so much for making the time, and I really appreciate both of you for continuing to write about this and continuing to bring it to the forefront of this conversation. I think this has very long-lasting consequences for kids who are already facing a lot of barriers to success. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I have one of my colleagues to help me with some ads, previous guests of the West Steps. Steph.
That's me.
Who's our sponsor this week?
Support for this episode is provided by Effect, a Denver-based digital agency that helps campaigns win elections. Effect supports outstanding candidates and initiatives that are focused on winning their election in order to positively transform communities. Learn more at EFFCT.org.
You want to say that last part again? Where can people go?
EFFCT.org.
That's effect.org. Thank you, Steph.
Thank you.
The West Steps is a production of the Colorado Children's Campaign. If you want to support our work, go to coloradokids.org.
Fun fact, you can also find out Erica's pet peeves on her profile page on our website.
Please don't do that.